So many of you know that I went through a bout of about 3 years with some serious anxiety. I would come to Sims like a regular sit. When we were, I think it was when we were on Monday nights. No, it must have been Tuesday nights because we were at, it started when we were at Beth Shalom and it carried over into St. Mark's. I would get these panic attacks, would feel like I was having a heart attack. And I'd have this really hard time. I was too scared to sit. I was too scared to sit down because I always thought I was going to have a heart attack. And so I kept avoiding sitting unless I would be at Sims, because I figured if I had a heart attack, there'd be plenty of doctors in there that would help us out. So I would only sit when I was there around all these people. But I, you know, I came into the practice all by myself, sitting all by myself. And so not being able to sit at home was a big deal to me. It was as if something to my practice had been taken away. And I needed it back. And I wasn't quite sure how to get it. And so what I used to do is listen to chants. I would sit at home and find some chant that I love the sound of it. And I would listen. I just over and over and over and over and over keep repeating it and listening. And I begin to realize that I could practice returning to the body, returning to the breath without the anxiety. Somehow the sound of the chant would take away from my great fear. And gradually I begin to sit back at home. I think that is an example of what I think ritual is. I was really just doing a ritual of putting on the chanting in order for me to continue to sit by myself. And I think rituals are different than devotion. I think devotion is, you know, a commitment or discipline, somehow our willingness or persistence to practice or something that we honor or something greater than ourselves. But rituals are the thing that we tie together. It's the thing that gets us to that alignment, I guess you could say, to that commitment. When you have a commitment and you really want to do something, but you keep missing it, I think the rituals are what tie us to it, to create the space for us to be able to do it. So they're not, I don't think of them as ceremony. I think the rituals show up in ceremony, we know that, but they are not ceremony themselves. And I want to give you an example. So I used to, so I'm just going to talk a little bit about some rituals and devotions for a while here, and then we're going to open it up and see what people have to share. But I live for rituals. So I live for it. I make it up all the time. Whenever I need something, I make a ritual around it. And so, one of the things, okay, so, gradually, I could not keep listening to the mantras. There was a time when I began to realize that I was just listening to the mantras. I wasn't really sitting anymore. In the beginning, I was devoted to the sitting, and it got me to sitting again. But after a while, it was more about just listening to the mantras that I liked. And I can remember a time when I heard a mantra, and somewhere in the middle of it, I decided, I don't want to hear this anymore. This is, I want something slower. This is too fast. And so I stopped it and I looked for another one, and then I started it up again. And that's when I realized it was more about me listening to the mantra than it was about the ritual itself. And rituals can be like that. We can start a ritual and get so caught up in the ritual itself that we're not really connected to the present moment. And so I strongly believe that we constantly change rituals and we keep moving them, shifting them. And when we notice that the ritual doesn't work, you toss it and you get another one, something that's going to reinvigorate you in the moment. And so once I no longer needed the mantra to get me to sit and to get me to be quiet, I still had anxiety, but I was able to sit at home more. And so I created, it just so happened that was the time Rodney sent us all to that movie, What the Bleep Do We Know? I saw that movie and this guy, Japanese guy, if you guys know, talked to the water and told the water had certain characteristics, and the water seemed to respond. So I heard that one thing on that show, and then I decided to create myself a ritual around it. And so I would put water in a little container and light it up so that I could burn some essential oils. And instead of listening to music, I started taking in scents so that I could smell something pleasing to keep me steady. I still had all the anxiety, and I still think I needed something pleasant to get me in the cushion, but the music wasn't working. It was too distracting. And so this is what I wrote up for myself. So I had four containers with the Brahma Viharas, and this is what I told the water it was. Some waters were in the containers for compassion, and I just told the water, you hear the prayers of all mankind. You are tender, yet strong enough to hold any suffering laid at your feet. Through you, I can bring endless pain and sorrow into me and release care upon the world. So that's what I told the water, so that when I poured the water into this little vial that I lit like a infuser, like a diffuser, I could smell the oils through this water. Some water was kindness. So I said it was the spirit of God manifested in me. And you are gentle and kind. You're generous and friendly. You give life through you, all things are safe and protected. This is what I told the water. And then I would feel as though that water was supporting me. Because if you can get what I'm saying, is that the suffering that I was going through with the anxiety kept me off the cushion. But I had this desire to practice, and I had to come up with some gift that would bring me back to the cushion. That's what I think rituals are. I think they have three qualities for me. One, they create the space that I can align with whatever it is connected to my devotion or whatever my intention is, my aspiration, my value. I set a ritual up to create the space for me to step into it. I think of them as like hiking poles. So not only do they create the space so I can step in, but I also lean on it so that I can do this long journey, arduous journey. These hiking poles are the best thing since sliced bread when you're coming down a big old huge mountain. And that leaning on those poles is what I started doing, just creating a ritual and then putting it together. And then lastly, I think rituals are the buzzer. It's kind of like they're the bell here that tells us when we're in alignment and when we're out of alignment. And these rituals, I set them up and they kind of help me build trust in the Dhamma. This is the way they have always worked for me. So tonight I'm going to share a little bit about some of the rituals I've done so we can kind of see them. And then maybe you can begin to see how these things kind of tie together. We do rituals all the time in this practice. We do it with mantras, but I want to start with vows because vows, they are a way that we set in motion now today, an aspiration that I'm hoping to get to. I'm not there now, but I have this aspiration to be there. And I think the rituals are the ones that help us get to that. I mean, the rituals help us solidify our vows. So when I originally wanted to, many of you know, I kind of like had a crisis of faith. I realized that everything I had believed was a crock of mess. It was just not true at all. I had this expectation that life was going to be better later. I had to do all this work now, but later it would be better. And so all the way through life, me and the boys, I would tell them all the time, don't worry. As soon as I get through this semester, it'll be better. As soon as I get through this year, it'll be better. As soon as I get through the bar, it'll be better. So when I failed the bar the first time, I kind of just blew it off because I figured, okay, just, you know, racism. So I'll take it a second time and I'll be fine. I took it the second time and I failed it. And somehow failing it the second time after I had studied so hard, I just had this crashing realization that things were not going to get better. I was not going to make it. It was not going to be okay. Just, it was not, it was not, it was not. And I was so upset. That's how I got to the library and stumbled upon Trungpa Rinpoche's book. So when I started reading Trungpa Rinpoche's book, I decided one night, I'm going to be a Buddhist. That's it. That's what I'm going to do. Yeah. I didn't have any idea about Buddhism. I didn't have any idea about how to be a Buddhist. I didn't have but one book that I was reading. And then I decided I wanted to be a Buddhist. That was it. And I didn't have any sangha or connection with what it was I was doing. What I had was this really strong aspiration towards something. So I just created my own ritual around becoming a Buddhist. So I'm going to tell you how simple this is. I just created a little altar. I mean, I had an altar, but I just put a little Buddha on there. Put some flowers, candles, so I can smell good. Everything. You'll find that I always like to have rituals around things that are nice and pleasing. And then I had these three little candles, single candles, and I would light the candle, say my aspiration, and then vow. So like the first candle, my aspiration was, I want to be a Buddhist. So I vow to follow the teachings of the Buddha. That's it. Second candle lit that. I want to be a better human being. I vow to cultivate loving kindness. Bow. That's it. I want to be free of suffering. I vow to practice until the day I die. That was it. Simple as that. And then every once in a while, I would go back and say it. Bow. Say it. Bow. Say it. Bow. But what I am pointing to is at the time I said these things, I did not know anything hardly at all about Buddha, about Dhamma, about Sangha, about anything. I just had this aspiration. I couched it in this ritual and I started walking towards that. That's it. I think we have to build ritual into our lives so that we have something that we can lean upon when we're out in the world dealing with things that are going completely against the grain. No one in my world was like that. No one. So vows are one way that we connect to our aspirations. And then we just say those vows over and over and over and over and over. Next one is mantras. We all know mantras. I mean, mantras are kind of like some kind of sacred utterance. It's just an utterance. It could be a word. It could be a phrase. It could be anything. But you just repeat it, and it kind of helps you get in line with whatever it is that you're connected to or you want to be connected to, and it builds concentration into that energy. So the common mantra that we know as practitioners is the metta phrases. We say the metta phrases, we say the metta phrases, we say the metta phrases. And if you say the metta phrases and you just say them to try to fix something, it's not the way mantras work. The point for a mantra is to stay grounded in the present moment, like we did with the listening to the mantras that were music. You just stay grounded in the present moment and you say the mantra, you say the mantra, and you say the mantra, and you're actually letting the mantra carry your heart towards whatever that alignment is. So for with metta, you're letting the mantra of metta phrases carry your heart towards kindness or compassion or joy or equanimity. But I want to give you an example. So one time I was sitting doing a concentration retreat and I could not seem to steady the mind. And so I made up this mantra and I said, there's no past, because, you know, the mind's either going to think in the past, it's going to dwell on the future, or it's going to be somehow talking about me. So I said, there's no past, there's no future, there's no self, there's no me. There's only here, now, breath. And I would say that over and over and over and over and over to help me sort of steady the mind. So whenever I'd notice that the mind was wandering off into some thinking, I would start saying this mantra to help me steady the self. And then kept it with me, wrote it down, kept it with me. Wherever I go, I always say it all the time, over and over and over. It's a way to help me connect to this realization of just steadying my system, my mind, my energy towards this one thing. It's what we do when we do the refuges. It's a mantra, saying it over and over and over. The first time, for the second time, for the third time, we're saying the refuges over and over and over to get that alignment with the refuges. But you don't always have to say the mantras like saying the metta phrases. Something else that works really, really well, I have found, is that if you're in a moment, right? So you're in some moment. Let's just say you have some difficulty. You can ask yourself a rhetorical question. We used to do this a lot. I don't know if Tim still does it, but back when Rodney was around, he used to do diets all the time, and he would ask these repeating questions, and he would just ask the question and ask the question and ask the question, because you're not really looking for an answer. You're looking for the experience of it. And so I started realizing that in the midst of some chaos, I could ask into that chaos, where is softness? Where is ease? Where is stillness in this moment? And then it didn't matter what the mind said. It didn't matter. It's like, oh my God, there's no ease here. It's chaos. Did you not hear that word chaos? Like, I just say, thank you. That's what we said in the diet. So I would say, thank you. And I'd ask it again. And I would just keep asking into the moment. And somehow it's like a mantra, because it transformed my attention from the chaos to looking for softness or stillness or ease or whatever. Or there were times when I would just ask into some moment, how could impermanence be known in this moment? How could dukkha be known in this moment? Just what? It didn't matter what came up. I would just, it's a rhetorical question, and I would ask again, and I would ask again, and I would ask again. How could clinging be understood in this moment? How could dependent origination be understood in this moment? How could attachment be understood in this moment? And I would ask it over and over and over and over and over and over. I just always put a thank you on it and ask it over and over and over. I was doing that because I enjoyed those dyads so much when Rodney used to do them. I was always amazed that he knew what question to ask first and the question to ask second, and the second question was always softer. And so I would ask that this question all the time. But what it became was a way for me, when my mind was getting caught in too much drama, to give it something to ease it, to settle, and to help me come back to the present moment and not get lost in the drama. So that's mantras, vows. The last two things I want to mention that you can do with rituals. One has to do with chants. Like traditional chants, not the chanting of a mantra, but there are lots of traditional chants. And there's a lot of rituals that go into just saying the chants. So one chant that, I'm not going to do this one because it's way too long. But one chant that I used to do over and over and over is I used to read the sutta on effacement. There are 44 ways in which you can let go of harm. 44. And what gets me is that the Buddha, when he first told his monks about it, he basically said that the 8 ways that we think we are accessing non-harm is not accessing non-harm. So if you think that you're just really detached from all objects, all sense objects, I don't care about nothing, he said that's peaceful, but it's not effacement, or you have not erased non-harm. And we know that. We can be great practitioners and we still do a lot of harm. So he said, you could still all that negative thinking. So you don't even have that negative thinking anymore. You've stilled it all. The mind is calm and easy. You will still do harm. He said that even if you were in rapture, like you're feeling this just great joy all the time, you could still have harm. And so he goes through these eight ways in which we think, surely if my mind is so deeply concentrated, I will never harm anybody else because I'm so concentrated. Nope. And so he listed 44 ways in which you could practice non-harm. Just an example of the first three. He says, others will be harmful. We shall not be harmful here. Thus, effacement can be done. Others will kill living beings. We shall not. We shall abstain from killing living beings here. Thus, effacement can be done. Others will take what is not given. We shall abstain from taking what is not given here. Thus, effacement can be known. And basically, he goes through all of the precepts and all of the Eightfold Path and all of the various mind states that you can get your mind caught in, the hindrances. And he goes through 44. And so I used to read this every morning, like a practice. Every morning, sit there, do my meditation, read what it would take to be in a world where I was not harming. Not because I was not harming anyone now, but because I was harming people. And I would read it and do this kind of chant to help me remember how to abstain from harming people. And I want to give it, I want to show you another one that I don't do that one as much anymore. This is the one that I use now. But I want to show you how I do it so that you can begin to see that it is important, I think, to tie some of these rituals to something that you enjoy. And I enjoy this chant that Kittasaro did. Kittasaro with Tanisara. They have a chant on, you can go to Dharmagiri. And then if you go to the Sacred Mountain Sangha link, and then in that link, there's a resources. You can find some chants. And this is one of the chants that are that he does. And so this, I'll show you what I do in relationship with it. I read the four awarenesses. I better get both of them. The four awarenesses and the five remembrances together, just in relation with this chant. Let's see, make sure it's up. So maintain an awareness of the proper preciousness of human life and the particular good fortune of life in an environment which you can hear the teachings of the Buddha Dhamma. Maintain an awareness of the reality of death, that it comes suddenly and without warning. Maintain an awareness of the entrapment of karma, that whatever you do, whether virtuous or not, only further entraps you in the chain of cause and effect. Maintain an awareness of the intensity and the inevitability of suffering for yourself and for all sentient beings. With that attitude as a base, you should call upon your teachers with devotion, inviting into yourself the atmosphere of sanity, inspired by their example, and vowing to cut the roots of further ignorance and suffering. I am of the nature to get sick. Nothing and no one can change that. I am of the nature to grow old. Nothing and no one can change that.
I am of the nature to die. Nothing and no one can change that. All that is mine and all that is dear to me will change and vanish in time. Nothing and no one can change that. I am the owner of my actions and their effects. I am born of my actions and their effects. I live by my actions and their effects. Whatever action I do, whether good or bad, of that effect, I shall be the heir. So, I tie that together with that chant, and then I do a series of vows and a series of 37 practices. It is a way to help me align myself. But the reason why it aligns so well is because that chant I love. So I love that chant, and it helps me remember to say this, to stay with it. I have it tied together with the timing, and that's how I remember to always get that suffering is always going to be there. It's inevitable. I'm not trying to get away from it. I am remembering that I am of the nature to be sick and that I can die. All of that, those four little two little cards, that information is designed to help me remember how it is to be human and what it is that I'm taking on. So the last thing is, you can use rituals with movement. So yoga, qigong, walking meditation. This walking meditation that we do at retreats, the sitting, walking, those are all ritualistic in and of themselves. But we can use that walking meditation as a way to create ritual and connect the walking meditation to some understanding with the Dhamma. Connect the Qigong to some understanding with Dhamma. Connect your Tai Chi or your yoga. You can do yoga and then see if you can connect that yoga to a practice. Meaning that, is there a way that you can connect the yoga to the precepts or connect the yoga to your, refuges or the five recollections? How could you tie that together? Even if you were doing, let's say you're doing the sun salutation. So you're doing this sun salutation and you are connecting it to a mantra that reminds you that you are of the nature to get sick. You do a sun salutation that reminds you you are of the nature to grow old and that you are of the nature to die. And that even though you're doing the sun salutation, because that's the practice you want to do, it is connecting and interweaving with the wisdom of Dhamma so that you don't, so that you feel it and you're connected to it regularly, ongoing. When we bow, and we're going to do this forgiveness ceremony in a couple of weeks, and there will be plenty of bowing. That bowing is also of the nature to get our bodies to remember what it is that we're doing. It's to remember the humility of practice and the connection with it. Anyway, I said a lot. I had way more to say than what I actually said, but that's good enough. I want to inspire you. What I wanted to do was say enough and show you how simply they're tied together so that you will never feel as though you need to work on something by yourself. That sense of, you could take something as simple as, let's say you you feel like you're judging people all the time. So you hear that little judgment in your mind and you hear it and you just notice that you're always making some wise crack judgment about someone. You really just don't want to do it anymore. Okay, so you can tie that, this vow not to judge to yoga practice in the morning. You could tie it to a mantra. You could tie it to a smell of a essential oil, a candle. You can tie it to something and then you practice every morning. It's not about not judging. The ritual will help you know and remember and notice when you're judging more and more and more and more and more and more. You will notice. And as you notice it, you will catch yourself and pull back ahead of time. So all you do is the ritual every morning with this intent to align with this intention not to judge. But you keep noticing you're judging and you just keep going back to the same ritual over and over and over. The judging stops, not because you make it stop, but because you have aligned your heart, you've aligned your, I think, your intention and your own heart together, and you tie it together with the ritual. And I think the ritual is what helps us move past it. So I know that rituals are steeped in religiosity, and it can get to a place where it can feel a little stoic, like stifling. But that's why I wanted you to hear that while I started using music, the chants, as a way to help me deal with anxiety, I had to let it go because I started listening to the chants and it wasn't really doing what it was doing anymore. So it's not that you have to keep the ritual forever, but the ritual, as long as it is pointing to when you are moving astray and when you are aligned, as long as it's helping you get down the mountain or get up the mountain, as long as it's helping you create a space where you can step into something bigger than you, then you use those rituals to help set things up. And then they kind of move you along the path little bit by little bit. So there's no expectation that you are something right now. You are moving along the path like the rest of us. So let's just sit for a moment here. Oftentimes, practitioners or monastics or teachers will tell you that if you want to, if you want to deal with boredom when you're sitting, then recite the qualities of the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. And I'm going to read to you what those qualities are. So you just contemplate on each one. So for the Buddha's reputation has spread far and wide. He is the blessed one, a worthy one, an awakened one, consummate in knowledge and conduct, one who has gone the good way, knower of the cosmos, unexcelled trainer of those who wish to be taught. He is a teacher of human and divine beings. He is awakened. He is blessed. For the Dhamma is well expounded by the Blessed One. To be seen here and now, it's timeless, encouraging investigation, leading onward. It is seen by the wise for themselves. And finally, for the Sangha, they are the Blessed One's disciples who have practiced well, have practiced directly, have practiced insightfully, have practiced properly. They are worthy of gifts, worthy of hospitality, worthy of offerings, worthy of respect. And they bring incomparable merit into the world. Thank you so much. So I want to see what I want to know how you felt about this evening. It's a little different. See how you feel about it, what you thought about it, and if you have your own rituals or your own things that you do to connect with people, and just see if anybody would like to share. Okay, good. We're getting our little thing. You may have to sit over there. Good.
You talked about Qigong, and you've got your Qigong video, and I started doing that. I haven't been doing it so much lately, but it really made a difference in my embodied understanding and just feeling about, you know, what loving kindness feels like and what compassion feels like and generosity and yep. Sorry, all of it. I mean, it's really amazing. So I love your suggestion to add a mantra to add well, the music mantra to your own mantra.
Yeah. To your own words.
To your own words.
Yep. Yes, it's the tying together something pleasing. I found that if you tie something pleasing to some difficult concept or some difficulty that you're having, that the tying it together is what enables you to be with it, steady you up, and help you stay there. Oh, I see a hand there. Jean. Hi, Jean.
Hi. I feel like there's an echo, but can you hear me? I'm getting feedback. Okay.
We don't have an echo here.
Oh.
Oh.
Great. So anyway, I just wanted to say that I appreciate my takeaway from tonight is an encouragement to be creative. And you know, I have a background in doing Tibetan practices, which are full of ritual and mantra, but you do it in a certain way.
Yes.
I'm not doing that anymore. Not so much, but I just am grateful for what felt like encouraging us to experiment. And
that's what I'm doing.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you.
You're welcome. That's what I'm doing. I'm encouraging you. When you come up against something difficult, to not just leave it as a difficult thing, but to actually tie it to something positive or something pleasing or something that you enjoy and tie those two together so that you can practice with something difficult without being overwhelmed by the difficulty of it itself.
Yeah.
I'm a little lost on why everyone's so quiet. You should be jumping up and down, but that's okay. Okay, go ahead, Katie. Okay, good. I'm like, what? I'm like overwhelmed right here. I'm trying to be calm and collected.
I feel like I talk a lot, so no, I'm trying to practice not talking.
No, you're fine.
I love this.
Okay, good.
Like, this is one of the best. I think this is one of the best sites I've had at Sims. And since I got back from retreat, I've been like lighting candles and like chanting every morning. And it's been really, really beautiful. It just sets this container. And I guess, well, it's interesting because I feel like it took me a while to get comfortable with that, because I just had to get comfortable with like, oh, I am Buddhist. I'm a part of an organized religion. Like, I'm actually like okay with that now. But I do wish, like, and I know a lot of people are still uncomfortable with it, but I do wish we could like bring a little bit more of this in, like on a more like monthly or weekly basis.
Me
even
too.
If it's just like dipping a little toe in or something.
Me too.
It feels really nice to do this like with other people too. It's really powerful. So
yeah,
thank you.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. I miss it. So I know there's one other hand here, but I will take somebody on the call, and then I'll, who's the next in order? Kathy?
Yes, Tuary, you've given, I think you've read this before, but I wonder if we could have somewhere, or we could find the whole of the little bit you read about, I am of the nature to grow old. I am of the nature. There was a bit before it that time.
Oh, the maintaining the four recollections or four preliminaries, really. Yeah.
It ended up with I'm born of my karma. I live by my karma. Mm-hmm.
It's the four awarenesses, maintaining the awareness of the preciousness of human life. I'll send it to you, Kathy.
Oh, terrific. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
What a wonderful night. I really enjoyed it.
Good. Thank you. Yeah, Romley.
I just want to thank you for doing the devotion and ritual.
Good.
Because I had so much reaction and push back to it in the beginning, and I realized how much I actually have already cultivated rituals and devotion, and I just had so much reaction because of my history. It's good to see that.
Yeah,
and I see that it's intention. You know, it's the intention to practice. Ultimately, that is a ritual until it becomes a way of being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, that's and I wanted to bring it up like this because I have been making up rituals for a long, long time. I just make them up. Something's difficult. Oh, let's find some ritual, tie it to it, and then let's get started to dealing with it. I don't look at it as some big grandiose religion kind of thing. I just look at it as, how am I going to be able to practice with something and tying some ritual to it? Some song I love, some smell I love, something that is on the positive side to help me steady myself and be with it. And that's what I wanted to encourage you to
help you stay within the context of practice and not have practice be just this self-help thing that I'm trying to make myself a better person, but it's not couched in sacredness and the divine. And so it just becomes by rote trying to be a better person, and you can't. You're kind of stuck with the being you were born with. I don't want to be the one to tell you, but you're going to be the same being when you die. It's not really going to change much. But the difference is you don't have to cause harm in relation to who you are. And that means we have to see the difficulty that we are trying to avoid. So there's a couple of hands here. Let's see. Okay, go ahead, Sean or Bruce.
Hi, Sean.
Sean.
Yes. So this wasn't at all what I was expecting tonight. I just really loved that you sharing these rituals that you do. To me, they're just real practical. It's like putting flesh and blood on the Dharma in areas that you want to really get deeper inside of yourself. And as someone else mentioned, using your own creativity of a way that personally works, that personally will work for me to be able to open up to whatever it is I'm wanting to open to. And,
that's right.
Yeah. And when you shared that you decided after you read that book that you were going to be a Buddhist, Bruce and I were completely cracking up because it's so you know? And here you are, a Buddhist teacher, which shows how powerful an intention like that that comes straight from the heart, even though you have no idea where it's coming from, where that can take you. And I just love you, Tuwari. I just really love you. Thank you so much.
Welcome. Thank you. Well, that's what I'm trying to point to, is that we have this way. If the Dhamma were about self-help, self-improvement, then there's this expectation that we got to fix something, and it just doesn't work like that. But when you realize that it's really just about setting an intention and letting that intention unfold in its own way, then you just use the rituals to help you know when you're not in alignment and when you are in alignment. I'm not, oh, if I do this, it's not in alignment. If I do this, oh, that's not in alignment. I don't know if I told this group, but I think I told Thursday night that when I was at the month long in March of 2019, I had decided that I was going to take 11 precepts. I was going to take on lifetime precepts. And one of them included not having any entertainment. But I had been preparing for this for a year. And so I was pretty much ready. And so Bhante Buddharakita, my preceptor, and he was ready. The two of us, I was ready to do it. And I did my vows. And then the next day, I think I did my vows in the morning. And by the afternoon, they were saying, yeah, we're closing down because COVID's coming, you know, so we're closing down and there's going to be this pandemic. And so I went home, and I mean, what are you going to do when you're stuck in the house except watch TV? I kept trying not to watch TV. I'd go to like, I would be like, no entertainment. And then I begin to realize we were going to have to look at this a little different way, because I kept leaning into watching TV and there would be this felt sense of I'm doing something wrong. But then I realized that the vow actually helps me know when I am watching way too much TV. So it wasn't I'm not monastic. I'm taking on this vow true enough, but it is to help me, it is to help support me not just getting lost in TV. And so the vow itself became this gauge, not so much about not watching TV, but more about knowing when I am careless with television, leaning into it, not paying attention. That's what it became. And that helped me. The vow still, I mean, I'm living with it for the rest of my life. I hope before I die, I won't watch TV, but I don't know. Who knows? I'm just sort of going along. I think Carla's next. Yeah. Hi, Carla.
Hi, Twiri. Well, I'm just loving all of this too. I mean, I am someone who loves ritual, and especially like in a community with other people, it really affects me. I mean, it touches me, and I find it very supportive. But there are two things I'm thinking about. The one is, years ago, I heard a talk by another Insight teacher, and he was talking about discerning between being sensitive and being sentimental. And mm-hmm. this is coming up for me right now, because I'm noticing a lot of what I experience with ritual is, you know, you said that pleasantness can be a support in a way to stick with a difficult practice. But I'm, you know, I'm questioning for myself, where is it just sort of me giving myself over to sort of the pleasure of the smells or the music or even sort of the comfort of being held in community? And is that actually supporting awareness and being with difficult things? And I noticed with the mantras we were listening to, or with the chants, like music, especially music, just touches me very deeply automatically, mm-hmm. no matter what it is. So I feel, and when it's beautiful like that, I felt, it triggered a lot of vulnerability, like a feeling of vulnerability and longings. So it was very emotional for me. And so I guess I'm thinking about, on the one hand, maybe like using music in connection with practice isn't the right way for me, because it just makes me feel very sentimental. On the other hand, I could also look at it as, well, there's a certain fear of feeling vulnerable, of feeling longings. So maybe those are things I should be practicing with and actually bringing up in an intentional way. I'm not sure. I'm just curious to hear what your thoughts are on that.
So I think you're bringing up a very important point, which is what I was trying to point to when I started listening to the mantras, and I was just listening to them. I wasn't really using them for the intended purpose of helping me close my eyes and practice by myself. So that what I think the Dhamma teacher was referring to as sentimentality is when you're lost in the ritual itself and you're not using the ritual for practice. And whenever that, as long as you're using that ritual to bring you back to practice, then the ritual itself is the anchor that helps keep you with whatever it is. So if you're listening to mantras and you're getting very vulnerable and lost in it, then the mantra itself is not helping you, supporting you in your practice. Sort of like what you're saying. So I wouldn't use it if it's not supporting you in the practice. But equally, you could have an essential oil that smells really nice, And it helps you in the difficulty of sitting quietly. And that restlessness gets too much. You then can use an essential oil, or you can use sitting in a garden. I mean, there's just all kinds of softening ways to help us come into the Dhamma. I do not know where this idea of pleasure is anti-Dhamma. I don't know where that comes from. We just need to wipe that out. Just get rid of that. Because life is major suffering. It's major suffering. It follows us everywhere we go. You don't have to worry about finding suffering. You just have to wake up in the morning and somewhere it's going to find you. So what the pleasure is to help you be with the suffering. And we end up giving up the pleasure, but by giving up the pleasure, we also give up our willingness to be with suffering. Oftentimes we are dwelling in misery, but we are not practicing with suffering. So that pleasure is what is tied to it to help you actually investigate the nature of the suffering and not try to get rid of that suffering, nor are you going to be dwelling in it. You're tying it to something pleasurable so that you can be with it. Does that make sense?
It really does, yeah. Now, this is giving me a lot to think about, because I think you're right that often it's more of an avoidance of really being with something painful by making that excuse of, oh, but, you know, I don't want to cover it up with something pleasurable, but then I'm not really working with it either. I'm just kind of...
We're just avoiding the whole thing.
No, that really makes sense. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. And so using the pleasure, you are right. And what that teacher said is you don't want to get so caught up in the pleasure that it's just about the pleasure, which is what was happening with the chanting. And I had to let it go. But I found something else pleasurable to help me stay. I needed something to help me stay with that anxiety, because the anxiety was so uncomfortable that I would choose not sitting rather than sitting with the anxiety. But if I could put some orange essential oil in a thing of water, and I think this water is somehow connected to compassion or somehow connected to joy, then I can breathe in that water and smell the orange, and then I can be with that anxiety. Because nothing I did was making that anxiety go away. And I was either going to have to find a way to sit with the anxiety, or I was going to not sit. And I couldn't bear the thought of not sitting. And so I just found a way to sit with it so that I could let it be and not have so much aversion. That's what you're trying to do. You're not trying to mask over it, and you're not trying to wallow in the joy, just the pleasure. Yeah, Sean.
Hi.
Hi.
I absolutely love this.
I feel so happy. I'm so glad. I was a little worried. It was a little quiet, and I thought, uh-oh.
This is like made me realize I was a little ashamed of my rituals. I too would like to make them up. And I was wondering, like, should I be doing this? But I would do it, or whatever, each actual day, and it felt good. And my rituals are more related to, when I feel something during the day, the actual anxiety that I feel during the day, I will do a ritual so I feel more grounded in what I need to do.
Oh, that's beautiful.
So it's, yeah, so Yeah, and so it really helped me what you had, you know, my thinking was to explain just now, it really helped me to realize that the rituals link me to being grounded throughout the day. And if they can link me to being grounded throughout the day, then I'm more mindful throughout the day. It isn't just when I sit or when I do something, you know, here and there, but mm-hmm. things just kind of show up and I will do things that really help me to stay on the actual path versus spiraling out. So it's,
yeah, that's...
so I have found that to be extremely helpful. And I no longer feel weird much.
Oh.
This was actually kind of like, this for me was liberating. So really, really thank you. Thank you for that.
Beautiful. I'm so happy. I feel so happy. I was so worried. I thought, well, I've warned everybody. So anybody that comes already has a warning. Because we don't really practice like this very often, but I wish we did. I wish we had more of it as a way to connect